Welcome to Fort McMurray Matters, keeping you connected to our community.
Brought to you by Cooper & Company Law Firm and Fort McMurray Orthodontics.
On Play 103.
Joining me on the phone here today is Dawn White. She was the mother of Gracie, who donated her organs after she passed away at the age of 17. Dawn, how's it going here today?
It's going not too bad. You know, we have our ups and downs, and we certainly are learning to live without her. So it's a new way of living for sure. But each day is a new day, and we count our blessings that, you know, Gracie was able to help other families continue their fight in being able to keep living and whatnot. And, you know, we're proud that she was able to donate her organs, and it does the heart really good knowing that, you know, she was able to save other people's lives.
Maybe tell us Gracie's story, if you could.
Okay. Basically, Gracie was always a very healthy child. We never, ever had issues. We always called her the child that never seemed to have any problems compared to her other siblings. And so she began to get sick shortly after COVID, or the start of COVID, I should rephrase that. So she got her vaccine in June of 2020. And basically what had happened was she instantly got sick. So I took her to the doctor, and the doctor said, oh, it's just basically anxiety and things like that. It progressively got worse. By October, I noticed some different things happening with her, brought her back to the doctor again, and, you know, we started doing tests on her, and they kept saying, nope, nope, we can't find anything wrong. And I kept saying, you know, something's just not right. So I thought, you know, being the typical teenager, she was just trying to get out of school, and You know, until the day that I witnessed her having these, I'm going to call it like, you know, most women in their late 50s going through the, you know, that lovely change of life and having this hot flash. And all of a sudden she started sweating, and all of a sudden there was the vomiting. And I said, are you okay? And she said, no, Mom, there's something wrong with me. And I, you know, so I brought her back to the doctor, and, you know, we started trying to rule out, you know, different things. We thought she had, you know, appendicitis. Then we went into thinking she had, you know, being maybe possibly diabetic, you know. Then we thought maybe, you know, all these other things were running through our minds. And then nothing. So, you know, so we first keeping an eye on it, you know, back and forth, like I said, blood work. And of course she hated the idea of having blood work. So as the months went on, she progressively started getting worse. And I had a call from her, work, cause she worked at, Sobeys, at the time, downtown. And they called me and they said, Dawn, I'm going to send Gracie home because she can't stop vomiting. And I said, oh, okay. So can you come and pick her up? And I said, sure. So I sent my husband and my son down to pick her up, and she came home. And she had invited a few friends to stay over that evening. And, you know, she said, I said, are you sure you want to have a sleepover? And she said, well, yeah, sure, I do. And I said, well, you're not feeling the best. And she said, no, but I still want to hang out with my friends. And I said, oh, okay. So they had went out for a car ride. She started doing the overheating part again. And her friend had to drive with the windows down at minus whatever 40 it was at the time, and whatnot. And, you know, she came home. And at this point, she was, most nights she was coming up and wanting to stay in our room with us. And so she came up in the middle of the night and she said, Mom, I don't feel good. Can I stay with you? I said, sure. She said, I think I'm going to get sick. And I said, oh, okay, let me go out and get a bowl. So I'd left the bedroom and went to the kitchen to grab that bowl. And I came in and I noticed her slumped over, and I called out her name a couple of times. I said, Gracie, Gracie, are you okay? And she never answered. Then all of a sudden, I noticed her into a seizure. And so I immediately woke up my husband. And, of course, everything that you know goes totally out the window. And I'm having a complete meltdown. And so we get her to the hospital. And they said, oh, it's a one-time thing. I wouldn't worry about it. So, you know, they done, you know, CAT scan, MRI, blah, blah, blah. No, don't worry about anything. So I thought, oh, okay, you know. 3 weeks later, she has another seizure. And it was at that time that it was a different doctor that happened to be on. They said, oh, there's, we noticed a tumor. And I said, a tumor? What kind of tumor? Well, maybe it's not a tumor. Maybe it's a growth. And I said, okay, like, what's going on here? So I said, I want to be sent to Edmonton, and I want to be sent to Edmonton now. So we go to Edmonton. We go see a neurologist. And they test her, and they said, oh, she has epilepsy, generalized epilepsy. We'll put her on this medication, and she'll be fine. I said, oh, okay, perfect. I said, do you think it has anything to do with the COVID vaccine? Because I said, she was never sick. She never had any signs of seizures before. But I had watched a program on Global News about a young girl that was perfectly normal. The minute she had gotten COVID and the vaccine, she became instantly sick. And my daughter has the exact same symptoms. And they said, oh, no, nothing has been proven with the vaccine. You're fine. You're fine. I said, oh, okay. Well, you know, but so be it. So she continued on with having seizures, but not frequent. And they put her on the medication, but yet it didn't seem to be improving, so they changed a bunch of different things. She progressively, got worse, heart rate going to as high as 220, vomiting up to 27 times a day. I was in Edmonton pretty much every second week, but nobody could give me answers. They told me this tumor was actually nothing to worry about, to go on about her daily life. So I thought, okay, sure. I said, what about the headaches? What about all this other stuff? And they said, oh, well, it should settle out. I said, she's had a headache for 18 weeks straight and can't get out of bed. She can't go to school. This is not your average, typical teenager going through a migraine or any of those things. And they just kept giving her pills without sort of trying to figure out the problem, more or less. And so she was on, at the time of her death, she was on about 27 pills a day. And so we went back down to Edmonton in January of 2023. And that day she had said, Mom, I don't feel good. We had went into Costco, and she had said, Mom, I think I need to just go sit in the car and wait. I said, oh, okay. And she said, I don't want to go shopping. And I said, what teenage girl doesn't want to go shopping? And so as we were waiting for our hotel room to be ready, she took another seizure. We called an ambulance, but we couldn't get the seizures under control. And at this point, all the medications that they were giving her in the ambulance couldn't put nothing, take her out of the seizures. And so we get to the Stollery, and they said to me, I explained the whole situation, the ER doctor that was on, I said, this is her neurologist, this is her nurse practitioner, blah, 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 blah. I gave them all the names. The ER doctor happened to say, oh, well, that's my wife. You're in good hands. I said, oh, okay. They called her right away. And he looked at me. He said, is your daughter a fighter? I said, yes, she is, very much so. And all of a sudden, she took this gasp, and he said, she's going to make it. And I said, what do you mean she's going to make it? All she had is a seizure. And he said, she can't breathe. And I said, what do you mean she can't breathe? And he said, we've come close to losing her. And I said, I don't understand what's going on here. So she was admitted. And then the next day they let her out. And I thought, oh, this is weird. I get her home. She couldn't remember anybody. She couldn't remember how to turn on her phone. She couldn't remember nothing. I contacted the neurology department right away. I said, there's something wrong. I think she's had a stroke. She's very aggressive. I don't understand what's happening. We'll just go into your local hospital, and I think she'll be okay. If you feel that there's anything wrong, they'll send her back to Edmonton. I'm here like, we just left Edmonton. What are you talking about? So my husband brought her into the hospital. Well, if she's had a stroke, it's too late now because the time has passed the time has passed and we don't have that time frame. And I said, oh, okay. So that was in January, and we were sent back down to the Stollery in May, and she spent a week down there. They hooked her up to, it's called an electrocardiogram type of machine where they monitor the brain for 5 days. They could not get a reading. They said, nope, we don't believe she has epilepsy. I said, okay, perfect, sure. So they sent her home, and so that evening she said to me, Mom, nothing is going to happen. They won't let me move in the hospital. It's when my body moves. So that was on a Thursday. On the Friday, everything started over again. I said, let's go back to the hospital. She said, no, Mom, I don't want to go. She said, they're not doing anything for me. So that was the beginning of May. In June, she and her dad went to Edmonton. She had to go for another MRI. We had met with another specialist. It was a neurosurgeon. He said, you know, maybe this small little tumor is pressing on part of the brain that is causing, you know, these sporadic seizures. And maybe we need to relieve that spot on the brain. But we won't know much until we do another MRI in October. But we'll have a baseline now to know what we're working with. I said, oh, okay. So that was on a Wednesday. That was on a Wednesday. And on the Saturday evening, she said, Mom, I don't feel good. I had offered to take her to the movies with her brother and sister. She said, no, I'll stay home with Dad. So my son brought her home popcorn, and he thought she was choking on a piece of popcorn. And he went in her room. She was having a seizure. He came and got me right away. I knew what to do. I put her on her side. I waited my 5 minutes like I was supposed to before I called an ambulance, contacted the ambulance. They came into our home. And I said, she has a small airway. She had troubles back in January where we almost lost her. Her pH level dropped to a 6.7. So, you know, we have to be very, very careful. So we were able to transport her to the Northern Lights Regional Hospital. We get down to the Northern Lights when paramedic had bent over and said, oh, I don't think your daughter's breathing. And I looked at him and I said, excuse me? And that's when full-on cardiac arrest happened. They called a code blue. We come to discover she hadn't been breathing for quite some time. She was medevaced to Edmonton. At that point, we sort of had an inkling that she wasn't going to make it. We had to make the decision. So by Sunday, we sort of knew things were going to transpire. On the Thursday, the 15th, I met with the HOPE team. We talked to them about possibly doing organ donation. We decided to take her off life support. And on the Friday the 16th, we met with them. And I signed the paperwork to donate her organs to give somebody else the gift of life, to donate her organs because I knew she wouldn't want to suffer. And if she was able to survive, she wouldn't want to live this way. So on the 17th, they brought her into surgery. They took her off the life support, and she passed away peacefully after the donation. So she was ready to go. So I felt in my heart that she was okay to pass on, and she went home to be with the angels at just 17.
That's really impactful stuff, Dawn, and I'm terribly sorry for your loss. You know, our organ donation often brings comfort into grieving families. How has this process of donation helped you and your family in this terrible grieving process?
Well, you know, I wasn't sure how this was all going to work. Like I said, I knew that, you know, we signed the paperwork. We didn't know, like I said, how it was all going to transpire. Like I said, if we could help one family or if we could help multiple families, I knew I wanted to do this. And I knew that, you know, if she had the opportunity to speak, I knew she would want to do this too. Simply because Gracie was always that type of person who always wanted to help others. She was a bull in a china shop, and she didn't care what anybody thought. If there was something was on her mind, she let you know about it. She definitely was a force to be reckoned with. And so I couldn't look at it any other way, as in she wanted to help others. So when we looked at the donation of her organs, I looked at this as her last unselfish act. And she wouldn't want it any other way. She was an advocate for people bullying. She didn't like to see anybody being hurt. She stood up to people that would be that person who was, you know, being picked on. And she didn't care if it meant for her to get expelled from school or any of those things. She stood up for what she believed in. And like I said, this was her last unselfish act. And like I said, I got to find out she was able to donate, you know, her lungs and her pancreas and her liver. And, you know, there was, you know, a dad going to get to see his children grow up, and a young boy was going to get to, you know, experience, you know, growing up and things like that. So for me, knowing that she was able to help these people, you know, keep on living, it means the world to me and our family. You know, even though she wasn't able to keep living, I know that she's looking at us saying, you know what, Mom, you did the right thing. And even though there's days where, you know, I wonder, oh, wow, did I do the right thing? Did I do, you know, in my heart, I know I did. But does the pain ever go away? No. You know, this was the year she was supposed to graduate from high school. This month is her birthday. She was supposed to turn 18 on the 29th of April. So, you know, these were all these big milestones for her. So, for me, you know, I'm not going to lie. This part hurts, but in the end, I look at all the things that are good from it as well. As even though it hurts, it's things that I can smile and say, hey, look at what you've done for other people. And to me, that means everything, to know that she was able to help others.
With this being Organ and Tissue Donation Awareness Week across Canada, what message would you like to share with Fort McMurray and those about the importance of organ donation?
Well, my biggest thing is, yes, you can sign your driver's license to donate your organs, but the biggest thing is going on, you know, Alberta Health Services and actually signing up that way, because if you don't have, if you're in an accident or if you haven't let your family know your wishes, especially young children that, you know, hear of these stories and things like that, you know, it is so important to, it only takes a few minutes to fill out that little form online. There's so many people that you can help. And I think, you know, there is such a need for people who are on all these waiting lists that, and especially, you know, people in northern communities such as Fort McMurray and other places, that if people were more aware of the situations of, you know, transplants being needed and tissue donations, that, you know, if everybody started to get on board, maybe, you know, we could help save more lives out there. So, you know, it only, like I said, it only takes a few minutes to fill out that form on the Alberta Health Services page. And like I said, you know, make people aware that this is what you would like to do. I felt it was a great thing that I was able to speak with the team when we found out that, you know, there was no coming back from what had transpired with Gracie's health. And I wish that, you know, there was a better outcome. When we were at the Stollery, you know, that at that particular week, it wasn't just our family that was having to go through it. They were having to pick up and having to, you know, consult with another family, you know, about the exact same thing in the same capacity, because we were on the PICU unit. So there were so many families that, you know, in that particular week that they had to, you know, counsel with regards to organ donation. So to me, if you already have this already noted with your family, or if you've already signed this information into the healthcare system, it does make it a lot easier for, say, families to know what your wishes are, and it makes the world a good for those people who do truly need help. And I think that because this week is knowing that if we can promote it and make sure that everybody is aware of it, people are able to understand, you know, where everybody is coming from when it comes to donating their organs or for transplants and tissues and whatnot.
Impactful stuff, Dawn. Thank you so much for your time here today on Fort McMurray Matters.
Thank you.
That's the end of another edition of Fort McMurray Matters.
Want a copy of this or any past episodes? Download the podcast at play1037.ca. Brought to you by Cooper & Company Law Firm and Fort McMurray Orthodontics.
On Play 103.